Camp O'Donnell was a temporary holding station, a brief detainment in the Americans' long passage to other circles of hell. Most prisoners were kept there for only about 50 days. Yet O'Donnell was, for many, the most horrific experience of the war. It was the place where all the seeds of hunger and disease sown on Bataan came to full fruition. Americans had not seen deprivational grotesqueries on such a vast scale since the days of Andersonville, the infamous Civil War death camp for Union soldiers in Georgia. One prisoner later wrote, "Hell is only a state of mind. O'Donnell was a place." The sanitation was so appallingly bad, the stench so overwhelming, that the few Japanese who ventured inside the camp almost invariably wore surgical masks. The open slit trenches were breeding grounds for vermin, black flies, green blowflies, bluebottle flies, and intestinal parasites of every strain and stripe. The men were fed measly portions of whistleweed soup and lugao, a slop of watery rice that had a nauseating bluish tint and was often crunchy with maggots. The American side of camp was equipped with only two water spigots to serve the 9,000 POWs now imprisoned there. Each barracks, originally designed to accommodate 40 men, was crammed with more than 100. The double-decker sleeping bays were rank with the smell of humanity gone sour, Abraham recalled. At night, bedbugs by the millions crawled over us to steal the little flesh that still clung to our bones. The death toll at Camp O'Donnell was catastrophic. One out of every 10 prisoners who passed through O'Donnell perished there. In 2 months, more than 1,500 Americans and some 15,000 Filipinos were buried in mass unmarked graves. "We constantly wondered who would be next," said Burt Bank. "We couldn't keep up with our friends. The death toll was like a scoreboard that was constantly changing." With men dying at a rate of 30 or 40 a day, the bodies began to stack up like cordwood. The burial details couldn't dispose of the corpses fast enough. "We worked like slaves digging graves," Abraham wrote. "The days fell on us like a relentless hammer. We were wretched animals. Every day we walked among the dead, having no thoughts, no desires. There was no stopping the deaths. They went on and on like the waves of the ocean." The critically ill invariably ended up in a place called the Zero Ward, so named because patients consigned there were believed to have no chance of survival, and thus, in the grim triage of the camp, were offered no treatment. It couldn't be called a hospital, one prison doctor later testified. It was merely a place for men to go to die. By the hundreds, the diseased, half-naked prisoners were laid out on straw mats. Flies swarmed over their bodies. They were caked in their own night soil, and their pipe-stem arms and legs were covered with raw sores. To simplify the preparation of burial records, medics would scrawl the terminal patient's army serial number across his chest with a tincture of iodine or gentian violet. When someone passed away, his clothes were removed to be boiled and later recirculated among the living, and the body was stacked behind the Zero Ward to await burial. O'Donnell was less a prison than it was an incubatorium for disease. A study in what happens when thousands of starving, ill men are brought together in close proximity in the tropics. Antique diseases that had long since been conquered by modern medicine rose out of the latrines for an encore performance. The vectors for contagion were too numerous to count. Pathogens spread from man to insect to beast to shit to man again. Starvation and vitamin deficiency lowered the immunological threshold for everyone, so that hundreds succumbed to diseases that wouldn't ordinarily have killed them. Principally, the patients were dying of malaria, dysentery, pellagra, acute dehydration, beriberi, or various sordid combinations thereof. Yet in many cases the act of dying seemed to come by force of will. Every doctor saw it. A patient who was sick, but not necessarily terminal, would suddenly get an unmistakable look on his face, a million-mile stare, a crushing melancholy, as if to say, "I cannot bear another moment." He would simply give up. Within hours, sometimes within minutes, he'd be dead. The prisoners called it give-up-itis, The doctors referred to it as inanition, the absence of spirit. Living was like holding onto a rope, said one medic. All you had to do was let go, and you were a goner. One person who quickly developed the characteristic look was Sergeant Arthur Houtby, A.B. Abraham's close friend. The hike out of Bataan had been too much for him. Look at Houtby, a friend said to Abraham one day. All he does is stare. He's in bad shape. I'm afraid he's not going to make it. A few days later, Abraham went to the ward to call on his friend. Houtby's face was coated in a quivering mass of flies. They buried him later that day.